is Saturday, August 22nd. Welcome to our weekend episode of The Newsworthy called Special Edition Saturday. Today, we're talking about what the data shows so far about kids and COVID as many head back to school. And we're not just talking about their physical safety, but also other potential short-term and long-term impacts on children who are growing up during this pandemic. And finally, we discuss what parents, caregivers, and communities can specifically do to help. My guest today is Dr. Edith Bracho Sanchez. She's a primary care pediatrician and the director of telemedicine at Columbia University. She also hosts a weekly podcast for Latino parents and has received several child advocacy awards. So here's our conversation about COVID-19 and children. Welcome, welcome to the Newsworthy Special Edition Saturday, when we sit down with a different expert or celebrity every Saturday to talk about something in the news. Don't forget to tune in every Monday through Friday for our regular episodes when we provide all the day's news in just 10 minutes. It's fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. It's time for today's Special Edition Saturday. You ready? Let's do this. Thank you so much for coming on The Newsworthy.
Thank you so much for having me, Erica.
So what does the latest science available right now tell us about COVID-19 in children? For example, how sick do they get with it? How often do they transmit it to others? What do we know at this point?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a loaded question, Erica, but it seems to be age dependent. So I guess first, if I had to generalize, the vast majority of children can get COVID-19, but when they do, they have mild symptoms, if at all. So that is, I mean, truly, when you look at the thousands of children that have gotten it in this country and then countries that came before us, that really does seem to hold true. Kids can get it, but when they get it, most of them do okay. Now, what we're starting to see is that in kids and teens, for example, like the kids that are getting closer to being young adults and not so much kids anymore, they can have more of the complications. The complications are still rare, but they seem to be happening more in that group. And then the kids under one, what we call infants, right, do seem to have more of those complications as well. So it seems to be that there are some age-dependent factors here. And of course, underlying medical conditions also play in, like they play in adults. But we're still learning, Erica. What I tell my families is we have so many pieces of the puzzle that we still have to put together. And that is why, you know, the best way to prevent complications is to keep your child from getting COVID in the first place.
We kind of have to make decisions despite the fact that we don't know everything.
Yes. And so the reality of it is now is that parents are doing what we call in science this risk mitigation, right? Like it's almost like everyone is having to come to terms with the fact that there's going to be some risk and that we're all going to take some risk and kids are going to be exposed potentially, perhaps maybe to COVID-19 in their schools, but how dangerous is it? How likely is it that they're going to be exposed? So it's sort of this consensus that everyone is reaching that the risk is not going to be zero and that we have to make decisions in this catch-22 that we've put parents in.
Right, because we've got the health risk on one side that we've talked about so far. But then the American Academy of Pediatrics has put out information with real concerns that many kids will get left behind if it's all remote because they don't have the internet resources, or that there's mental health concerns, or that there will be an educational gap, right? So how do you balance both of those types of risk?
Yeah, and it's a real consideration to have here, right? So the kids that are most at risk of falling behind and staying behind, right? It's not just, oh, you're going to fall a little behind and then you're going to catch up. No, we know that some of these things are time sensitive. Like if you fall behind, you may stay behind for years to come, and that has real consequences. And so it seems to be that the most vulnerable kids of that happening are the youngest ones and the kids who live in vulnerable communities, right? Low-income communities that already have a number of challenges. So when the American Academy of Pediatrics said that our goal should be to have all children in schools, you know, I agreed with that. Our goal should have been from the beginning to get our kids back to school safely. I think, unfortunately, it was interpreted as everyone should go back to school. And I think that's where we had to take a step back and say, wait a minute, that's not what we're saying. We're saying, you know, there are real risks of both going back to school, but also risk of staying home, especially for these youngest ones and kids in vulnerable communities. So now, unfortunately, I think what's going to have to happen is that we're going to have to do some things in an age-dependent fashion, knowing that this isn't going to be perfect and that it's going to take money. None of this is going to be free, unfortunately, Erica.
So can you give us some examples of what that maybe should look like?
Yeah, so I think it starts with controlling the virus in communities, right? So here in New York City, the positivity rate of the tests that are being sent and coming back, as you may have seen, it's less than 1% currently, right? So we sort of met that initial milestone that I believe, and public health experts agree, we need to meet in order to even consider this, right? I think I get very concerned when I see communities like Georgia, for example, like Florida, that are talking about opening their schools without even meeting that initial basic milestone. But once you've done that, it's not enough. You have to create layers of protection because we know that no one thing stops this virus. So how are you going to structure buses? Are all the buses going to have the windows rolled down? Is every child on a bus going to be required to wear a mask? Once they get to school, are we going to have staggered drop-off and pickup, right, later on in the day? And then as kids are walking around the school, are they going to be required to wear masks? And they need to be required to wear masks. Are they going to be spaced in the classroom? Do you even have that space? And if you don't, are you partnering with community organizations, with parks, with other people? Are you getting creative to do some of these things? But it's really not that simple for some schools to do this. You need resources to do some of this and you need buy-in.
What is this like for children right now? Is it stressful for children to have to wear a mask, to be socially distanced? And how can parents maybe help prepare their children if they are going back to school in person?
I'm seeing, Erica, a wide range of things in kids. So some kids, and really I should say the vast majority of kids, are adapting and they're doing well with all of the changes that we've thrown their way. So they are looking around, everyone's wearing masks, and they're not even questioning it. But there are some kids who are not doing that well, right? And those are the kids who have seen COVID in their households, right? Like, I think we can't forget that for every death we talk about in this death toll that keeps climbing and climbing, we're talking about a family who's left behind. And so I care for kids in some of those households who have lost a mom, a dad, a grandpa, a grandma. And so those kids are scared.
Do you think that there will be long-lasting effects on children from growing up in this environment?
It's a little bit hard to say right now because we've just truly never lived through anything like this. So the problem with kids is that we need them to take risks to continue to grow and develop. Like if you think about a child and how they learn and how they grow, what they're doing is exploring and they're sort of fearless in their exploration. And so when we think about trauma and about some of these events that can be traumatic to children, we start to worry when it seems to keep them from taking those risks. This notion that, oh, kids are going to be fine. It's like, well, most kids are going to be fine, but we truly have no way of predicting which kids those are and how bad it's going to be for the other kids who are unfortunately not going to be fine.
And I know you're not a psychologist, but any advice on that part about how parents should interact with their kids about this?
Yeah, you know, I've partnered with my psychiatry and psychology colleagues throughout this pandemic. And what I've learned, the lines of communication with your child are just so important. And I think parents often think that they have to sit down and have a full conversation from beginning to end and break it all down. Like, this is how this virus works. This is what we know about this pandemic. And that adds a lot of pressure, and it's actually not true, right? These are conversations that you build upon once you've opened those lines of communication. So you can get a sense of, you know, what your child knows or what your child is afraid of by asking questions. Just ask frequent questions. How are you feeling? What do you see today? How did this feel for you today? How did this go for you today? And that gives you a sense of how they are processing things. And from there, you can sort of tailor the information that you are giving to actually address some of their concerns, which, by the way, Erica, are often not what adults think are their concerns. Like, I think parents sometimes think that their kids are scared about one thing, and then when they actually engage them, they're scared about a completely different thing that is actually easier to address and reassure. And so those lines of communications. And the other thing that I would say is modeling. I think modeling behavior here is more important than ever. I think if you are putting on that mask and it's not a big deal. If you are washing your hands, if you're talking about this, about just like it's another germ and we're just going to protect our family and everyone around us, I think kids listen and they watch you and they follow your lead.
And if you found this helpful, please be sure to share it with other parents, caregivers, friends, and family. And don't forget to tune in to our regular episodes Monday through Friday when we provide all the day's news in just 10 minutes. Be sure to subscribe or follow in your podcast app so you're always in the know. Thanks again for joining us. I'll be back Monday with your news roundup. Have a great rest of the weekend.